Good evening, Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky, and Southeastern Indiana. This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. Tonight, we're talking to Marshall Crenshaw. Marshall Crenshaw is a singer-songwriter from upstate New York who's put out, almost 10 records now, 7 or 8 records over the last 15 years. His first record came out in 1982, self-titled Marshall Crenshaw on the Warner Brothers record label, and has since put out tons of great records. Well, Marshall Crenshaw, it's good to hear from you. How you doing tonight?
So far, so good.
Calling from his home in Woodstock, New York, we have Marshall Crenshaw tonight on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
I'm sitting on the back porch.
Really? How's the weather? Any fireflies biting tonight?
Loads of fireflies.
Just tons of them. They're just dotting the landscape, right?
Uh-huh.
And when you're out there in the great Northeast, be on the lookout for ticks, because as Chris and I learned not too long ago, the northeastern ticks can sometimes give you Lyme disease, and that's really nasty.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. You don't want any part of that.
God, no.
Okay, you want to talk about your new record?
That'd be a good idea.
Or would you like to talk about more diseases?
No, you can just segue right out of diseases into my new record.
Why is it called Miracle of Science?
It just popped into my head, you know. I mean, album titles are always like an afterthought with me, you know, just a formality. And I usually have a hard time coming up with a title.
Then why not Roman numerals like so many great bands have done? Chicago and Led Zeppelin come to mind.
I don't know. Maybe the next one will be...
Could have Kren 1, Kren 2, Kren 3, Kren 4.
Somebody told me to call my fifth album MC5. But I just didn't want to go there, you know.
I don't know which record bin it would be in at the record store.
I just felt like I'd be setting myself up that way, you know. And then another guy wanted me to call my fourth album 4, like, you know, holding a golf club saying 4. But these are all bad ideas, so.
I think Huey Lewis did that one, actually.
I bet he did.
I think he did.
Now, why are you wearing a hat on the new album cover? Rob says it's because you're going bald.
That's probably about right, yeah. You know, I'm not entirely bald, but I'm getting there. And so sometimes I like to wear a hat. Not always, though. I've gone on, you know, TV with my dome hanging out. I'm not really, you know, extremely vain, but I do like to wear a hat, you know, just to cover it up.
Now, you've been on a lot of those late-night TV shows. I've seen you on at least Conan and Dave Letterman before.
Right.
Have you been on Leno?
No, never have.
So, between Conan and Letterman, I don't know, maybe you've been on some other shows, who do you like the best? I mean, who treated you the best in the green room? who has the best food?
I don't think I got food at either place.
Then you got ripped off.
Can you guys hit the pause button?
Sure, yeah. We'll hit the pause button.
Okay, excuse me, I hate to do this.
Marshall Crenshaw is putting us on hold.
If that's Mitchell Froom calling
you.
Okay,
I'll be right back.
All right.
Okay, cool.
Think it's T-Bone?
Could be T-Bone.
This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. We're talking to Marshall Crenshaw. Could be T-Bone Burnett, his longtime producer and friend. MC5 would be a good name for an album.
U2 and Negative Land did that, you know. Negative Land called their album U2, and then U2 sued them, saying that people would think it's a U2 album called Negative Land, and then it sounds weird, and it's got Casey Kasem swearing on it.
That's a good record. I've heard that one.
I haven't heard it because it's unreleased now, or it's formerly released.
You haven't heard that?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry I had to do that.
Is that T-Bone? Was that T-Bone Burnett?
No, but it's this other thing. It's for some television show that I'm supposed to sing the theme song for.
What song is that? I mean, what show are you going to sing the theme song to?
Well, I don't want to say in case it doesn't work out.
You'll be bigger than the Rembrandts.
Are you rolling the tape now?
Baywatch?
We roll tape all the time.
Oh, you do?
Anything
all
you
right.
say could be held against you.
It's a thing called Men Behaving Badly.
Oh, the new Rob Schneider show. You
yeah,
on Saturday
right.
Night Live.
That's right. So, I mean, I knew I might get a call, and but anyway, I'm back.
Well, I hope you get it.
I didn't mean to be rude.
Okay, it just comes naturally to you.
Well, you know, the phone. I mean, I live and die by the telephone, you know. I'm in show business.
You're calling us from upstate New York, Woodstock, New York. How far are you from the famous Woodstock site of the Woodstock Music and Art Festival?
Well, the first one, the one in 1969.
That's the only one, if you ask me.
Okay, well, that was held about 50 miles from here in a place called Sullivan County. And then the one that they had 2 years ago was just about 12 miles down the road. Neither of them were in Woodstock, but you probably knew that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the reason I said that the first one is the only one that really happened is because it was the only one that didn't have security or a ticket price.
That's right, yeah.
How many free shows do you do a year, Marshall?
How many free shows do I do?
Yeah.
Precious few, and mostly none. But, you know, let me think. Yeah, on the average, none.
Okay, the new Marshall Crenshaw album called Miracle of Science on the Razor and Tie record label. Let me tell you, Marshall, of all the record companies that I've called in my history as a radio dude, the people at Razor and Tie have been the nicest to me just about.
Is that right?
Yeah, the lady named Liz who set this up, she's a sweetheart.
Well, I agree with you. They're a decent group of people, you know?
Yeah, they're good.
That's my phone again. I'm sorry. Hold on.
Okay,
we're being... Marshall Crenshaw is putting us on hold again. Maybe it's Chevy Chase wanting him to do the new theme to his new TV show or something.
Spies Like Us 2?
Yeah.
You know, Spies Like Us 1 was just horrid enough.
With Paul McCartney, though, doing the
thing.
Oh,
that was an awful song. And, sometimes I like Paul McCartney, but that was an awful song. We'll have to ask Marshall about that one.
Well, yeah, we will. If he ever comes back. We'll ask him about his new record, too.
Maybe, if we can get around to it.
It's called Miracle of Science.
While Mr. Crenshaw has put us on hold, let's take a listen to The Usual Thing, a song from his first record on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
It's Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show on WAIF.
On hold with Marshall Crenshaw.
On hold with Marshall Crenshaw.
You know, the Chris and Rob Show might be the only show in town that has been put on hold by some of Hollywood's biggest stars.
Biggest stars.
Like who? Who's put us on hold?
But did Buddy Hackett put us on hold?
No, he didn't. Jerry Lewis didn't put us on hold.
I'm back.
Hey, Marshall, Hi. How you been?
Now, who was that time? Was it Chevy Chase asking you to do the theme song to Spies Like Us 2?
No. It was the same guy as before, you know. Right. It's just.
And he knows you're doing an interview, so he's going to call back as often as possible.
I told him to stop.
So yeah. You're giving him your number. He's checking with his people. He's getting back with you. You're giving him a new number. He's checking with his. Is that what's going on here?
Yeah, I'm trying to be nice, so I told him not to call anymore.
Marshall Crenshaw, if Chevy Chase called you in the middle of the night and asked you to come up with the theme song to Spies Like Us 2, could you do a better job than Paul McCartney?
Well, I'm just hoping, and I think we're all hoping, that Spies Like Us 2 isn't going to be made anytime soon.
What do you think of Paul's career anymore, by the way, from one rock star to another? If you could sit down at a coffee table with Paul McCartney and tell him what you really think of his career.
What I think of his career?
Nowadays. I mean, of course.
Well, nowadays he's kind of not doing anything, right? I mean, like right this minute, this day. You know, I like the stuff that he wrote with Elvis Costello a few years ago. I thought he was really trying for a change, and I was never any great fan of Paul McCartney and Wings, but I think he probably made more money during those years than he did when he was in the Beatles, so maybe that was satisfactory for him.
He didn't have to split it with John.
Right. Somebody, a writer in the New York Times, came up with a good term for a lot of Paul McCartney's lyrics. They refer to them as sub-rational.
Whoa.
Hello?
Yeah. Hi, you want to get the other line again?
Yeah. Hold on.
Okay.
This is like talking to a 15-year-old girl.
What the hell is going on here? Well, he writes songs about 15-year-old girls, so it's kind of appropriate. We're talking to Marshall Crenshaw on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show and being put on hold for the third time.
Third time. And we are, what, 10 minutes into this bad boy?
10 minutes into this. Hope we have enough tape left.
You know, we haven't even asked him about any of his old... We haven't even asked him about his new record.
Not yet.
We haven't really talked about anything. Except being put on hold. This was live, remember?
I'm back.
Who was it that time?
Same guy.
Was it Peter Case?
Huh?
Was it Peter Case?
No. What makes you...
Well, we thought Peter Case might just now be getting around to congratulating you on such a stirring rendition of Steel Strings from about 4 or 5 albums ago.
Peter has a new album.
Does he? What's it called?
It's called Torn Again.
What record label is it on?
Vanguard.
We'll get a hold of that one, too.
You mean
it's
Vanguard,
good,
like
good.
The old folk label that put out Odetta Records 30 years ago?
Yeah, exactly.
They're still around?
They seem to be, yeah.
What does Vanguard put out these days besides the new Peter Case record?
You know, they put out some rap records in the 80s. They were kind of trying that, but it didn't really... take off for them. They really didn't gain a foothold in the rap market, but But this new Peter Case album is pretty good. It's got one song on it I really love called Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting in a plug for him because he's a good buddy of mine.
Okay. Well, your new record, Miracle of Science, includes a cover tune by Grant Hart.
Yeah.
2541. What inspired you to cover that particular song?
Well, I heard it on the radio, not by Grant Hart, but by a guy called Robert Forrester.
Used to be in the Go-Betweens.
Yeah, that's right. Robert Forrester from the Go-Betweens. And he made this album that has, it's his covers album. You know, it's him covering songs that he likes. And anyway, as soon as I heard 2541, it just hooked me instantly. And I don't know. I mean, I just dug the way it was so kind of spare and minimal in terms of, you know, song craft. You know, there's not a lot of words there, but it's just very, very vivid, you know.
Do you have another call?
Yeah. Hang on.
Okay.
Since Mr. Crenshaw has put us on hold yet again, let's take a listen to that song, 2541, written by Grant Hart from Husker Du, performed here by Marshall Crenshaw on the new CD. You're listening to the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. There you have it, the Grant Hart classic, 2541, performed by Marshall Crenshaw, who we are currently on hold with.
I guess we can ask him about Steel Strings and...
Marshall Crenshaw is moderately famous for all the different cover songs he's covered.
You know, he does a great version of Valerie, the Richard Thompson tune. Or does Richard Thompson do a great version of the Marshall Crenshaw song Valerie?
On the Downtown LP, Marshall does I'm Sorry, But So Is Brenda Lee by Ben Vaughn. You remember what was Ben Vaughn's combo? Band? Yeah, he had a band called the Ben Vaughn Combo. He did Soldier of Love, the old Motown hit, on his first record, self-titled Marshall Crenshaw. And on the new record that we're talking about, Miracle of Science, I think Crenshaw also covered The In Crowd,
mm-hmm.
which is an old, what would you call it? Another old Motown song?
We would call it an old R&B soul classic.
So is this guy like a punk popster, or is he like an old Motown, you know, throwback?
I think he's a little of both.
Who does Marshall want to be? He's got glasses, and he looks a little bit like, what's that guy's name? Buddy Holly from time to time?
Mm-hmm. Well, he played Buddy Holly in the movie.
He also looks a little bit like Donnie Iris.
Love Will Rock You.
Remember Donnie Iris?
Yes, I do.
I asked him about that.
I'm back.
Hey, Marshall Crenshaw, I got a question for you.
Okay.
You've got this image you've had since your first record. You know, good-looking guy with glasses. who are you trying to look like, Buddy Holly or Donnie Iris?
Buddy Holly or Donny Iris.
What was it like playing Buddy Holly in that movie? Which movie was that? La Bamba?
La Bamba.
Yeah.
Yeah, how'd you get the gig? You play, that was your Hollywood debut, I think, playing Buddy Holly in La Bamba.
Actually, you know what? It was the second movie that I was in. I was in two movies in 1 year, and that was kind of cool because then I got to join the Screen Actors Guild.
All right.
And I had health insurance for the first time in my life. So that was kind of a piece of good luck. But anyway, you know, they just called me. I mean, I got a call from a guy that I used to go to high school with, and he said that he'd heard a rumor that they were going to ask me to play Buddy Holly in a movie. And I kind of like rolled my eyes because about 3 years previous to that, I'd been in Beatlemania.
You played John Lennon, didn't you?
Yeah, and I kind of got burned out doing that, you know, it's just sort of like, it got to be a drag, and, but anyway, so he called, and, then a couple of days later, they just called me and asked me to do it. You know, you probably remember when La Bamba came out,
mm-hmm.
They had Brian Setzer as Eddie Cochran, they had, the guys in Los Lobos doing all the music, you know, if there was anybody who was on sort of like on the current scene at that time who bore some resemblance to someone in the movie, then they grabbed him and tried to get him to be in the movie. And so I was sort of like, you know, when my first album came out, a lot of people said, you know, this stuff reminds me of Buddy Holly. So,
well, now that your, what is it, sixth or seventh record is out, what are people saying now, and how many records is it? I lost count.
Seven, I think, unless you want to count this live album I did.
Live albums usually count, especially if you're Cheap Trick.
I still don't know if it's six or seven, but anyway, What are people saying now?
Yeah, what are people saying? Well, I'll tell you this. I saw a review in Rolling Stone, the current issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, they praise the record, but then they go on to say that, you know, you should be recording with people like Mitchell Froom and Neil Finn. And I'm like, Mitchell Froom and Neil Finn are all right, but you're Marshall doggone Crenshaw. You don't need to record with schmucks like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a... I sort of expected to get the shaft from Rolling Stone.
Why is that?
But, I don't know.
Well, it's not the shaft. They gave you 3 stars, and they did say go buy the record.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, it's like the one review where there was someone sniping about something. It turned out that it had to be in Rolling Stone, which I wish it had been otherwise. But, you know, the guy who wrote the review, he lives in this town, and he called me about a month ago, and... he said, well, you know, I really want to review your record, and then, you know, after I've listened to it, I'll call you. But he hasn't called me.
So he probably sold it to the used record store.
Maybe he's afraid to confront me now.
We're talking to Marshall Crenshaw on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Any plans to hit the road in support of your new record, Miracle of Science?
Yeah.
Can you get us a backstage pass?
If we play in Cincinnati, yeah.
Are you doing the full band thing or just Cren and his axe?
No, it's the full band thing.
Is your brother still in your band? You got a brother who plays, and I think he's been in your band before.
Yeah, no, we don't do that anymore, unfortunately. I kind of miss him, but on the other hand, when we did work together, you know, after a while it got to be that I was his, you know, his, I can't say this on the radio, but his, you know, his a-hole big brother. And
so there is some sibling rivalry going on.
Well, I didn't want there to be, you know, so that's why we sort of knocked it in the head, because I felt like things were getting a little tense, and I didn't want to have to be leaning on him. You know, he's a grown man and all that junk. So anyway, we stopped working together. Before,
well, you know, if there's any problems, you can just grab him by the neck and give him a noogie.
Yeah, I didn't want to do that. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't want our relationship to become. Anyway, you get the idea. He's sort of like not around anymore. But we're still good friends.
Kick him out of the band so that you guys can enjoy Thanksgiving, right?
That's right. I kicked him into the gutter.
So is it going to be a big tour, just northeastern United States, or where are you going?
I think I'm going to hit about 40 cities in 7 weeks. And, you know, I hope we get to Cincinnati.
What's your favorite part about touring? All musicians have to tour. And you get to play 50 cities in 50 days or something like that. You're always on the road, eating junk food in White Castles and cavorting with dirty women. What's your favorite part of touring?
Well, let's see. I like the shows. You know, after about the third one, I kind of fall into it, and it seems like, you know, when you're playing music every day, like after you do it for a couple of days, it just becomes real second nature. And so I like the shows. I like going around from place to place, even though a lot of the places are places I've been to before. But I just like the motion and the change of scene. I like traveling. You know, I think if I wasn't a rock musician, I'd like to be a truck driver or something, because I really just dig being on the highway. You know, like a lot of road trips that I've taken in my life have been real pivotal experiences for me. So I guess that's what I like, is the shows and then the change of scene all the time.
Maybe you could do like a CB radio song CD where you do like songs like Teddy Bear and stuff like that.
Somebody, I mean, you know, people say
Red Slowvine.
People say that the internet is like the CB radio of the 90s.
It all started on the CB radio, brother, and that's where the real folk talk.
Dave,
right.
Dave Barry said the internet is just CB radio with typing.
Right, yeah. So there's constantly this connection being made between CB radio and the internet.
We
right?
want to talk about girls now, because a lot of your songs, most of your songs, deal with girls, women, and love. And I want to know why they're late all the time, and then when you get angry, they think that you're mad for absolutely no reason. Why don't women understand that if they're 20 minutes late or half hour late, that is a perfectly good reason to be angry?
I don't know. Why is that?
I don't know, man. I was hoping you could tell me.
I don't know. You really caught me off guard with that. I'm just sitting here scratching my head.
Well, I'll tell you. Last time I broke up with a girl, I did nothing but sit around and listen to records by Marshall Crenshaw and Neil Young and cry my eyes out. It seems like you have a song for every emotion when it comes to dating and, you know, puppy love. And even even breaking up, especially breaking up, that song There She Goes Again from your first record is particularly a difficult song to listen to after breaking up with that someone special.
Is it really?
Oh, it sure is.
Huh, well.
Is There She Goes Again a song about a girl that you dated and broke up with, or is it just some song about some slut?
It's really just not about anyone in particular, you know. It's just a day's work, basically, but...
You mean you were just writing another song to try to sell a record?
I just have to say it's not about anyone specifically, no.
What about Cynical Girl from the same LP?
Yeah, my wife says it's about her. She likes the song. She's kind of taken it to her bosom, and she says it's about her. But I don't know.
What about Mary Jean?
But I've forgotten that one.
Why, you didn't like it?
It was a title track, and you forgot it?
What's that song? No, that's not... That one's
she
not
came into my
either.
Life like a bombshell, something, something, something. Mary Jean.
I'm not going to really tell you the truth anyway.
And what about the nine others? It's Mary Jean and nine others. I want to know about the other nine girls.
I hate that album title. Remember we talked before about how album titles are...
Well, where'd you come up with Mary Jean and nine others then?
I think it was somebody else's idea. I wanted to call the record The Unstoppable Marshall Crenshaw, but somebody at my record company thought that would be...
When's Jonathan Richman going to make a record called The Unstoppable Jonathan?
I don't know. You know, what gave me the idea was there used to be this con artist back in the 70s. He was kind of infamous, and his name was Glenn Turner. And he was kind of... I heard about him from a friend of mine. This guy was wanted in, like, 42 states for running these schemes, and I was in Orlando, Florida one time, driving down the highway, when all of a sudden I saw this billboard, and it said, Orlando, Florida, home of the unstoppable Glenn Turner. This guy had put up the money to erect this billboard in his own honor, you know, and to commemorate his skills as a con man. So I just like that word, unstoppable, you know. So I was going to call my record The Unstoppable Marshall Crenshaw, but it got... vetoed by somebody at Warner Brothers.
Let's check out this song, There She Goes Again, by the unstoppable Marshall Crenshaw. From the first album, Marshall Crenshaw, self-titled, it should have been called The Unstoppable Marshall Crenshaw. We're talking to Marshall on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Now, is Marshall Crenshaw your real name, or is it like Elton John or something? Like
it is my real name.
Do your friends call you Marsh for short?
My mother calls me Marsh.
Really?
Yeah.
She didn't name you after an amplifier or anything, did you?
Marshall Howard Crenshaw.
Supposedly, Jimi Hendrix's middle name is Marshall, and he was named after the Marshall amplifier. Or, I don't know, maybe somebody said they named the Marshall amplifier after him. I can't remember either. Well, listen, there's
you
another
got me
song.
All confused.
There's another song that is sort of about a girl. It's called You're My Favorite Waste of Time, the B-side to the Marshall Crenshaw hit Someday, Someway.
Yeah.
First of all, why was that song a B-side and not an A-side, if not a million seller? And two, who is your favorite waste of time?
Let's see. The first part first, I guess.
And I saw you do it on Letterman a year or so back.
Right.
Why'd you had a new album out when you were on Letterman. Why didn't you do a song from your new record?
Well, at the time I was plugging this live album, and there's a version of You're My Favorite Waste of Time on the live album.
Okay, we'll get back to my first two questions now.
What was that again?
Get back to my first two questions now.
I forgot what they were.
Why wasn't You're My Favorite Waste of Time a big hit in the A-side and on your first record, and who is your favorite waste of time?
Oh, all right. I didn't put the song on my first album because at the time I thought it was kind of too slick and it didn't fit with the rest of the songs on my first album, so I left it off. But then when the single was going to come out, they asked if I had any, you know, kind of non-LP material that I could stick on the B-side, so I put it on there. You know, I had this demo of it that I'd made at home, and the funny thing is that song just kind of won't die. It sort of snuck out, you know, and it's been covered a lot of times by other people, and it actually was a really big hit in Europe by this guy about 10 years ago, but it was just this one hit wonder guy named Owen Paul. But anyway, just about a month ago I heard that it's going to be used in a beer commercial in Germany.
You're making money from that, aren't you?
Yeah, the song just, like, it's the gift that keeps on giving, you know?
See, now, if you had done a studio version of that when it first came out, because the original version was like some four-track living room cut.
Right.
If you'd done out a slick version of that, I should have been your consultant. And released it like as a single, maybe with a couple of disco remixes, you'd have made $18 million.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well,
let's take a listen to You're My Favorite Waste of Time, performed here by Marshall Crenshaw and his Handsome, Ruthless, and Stupid Band, originally released as the B-side to the single Someday, Someway. Marshall Crenshaw on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. Marshall Crenshaw with You're My Favorite Waste of Time, who, if you just tuned in, we are talking to on the telephone. Marshall Crenshaw. We started off.
You're coming out, man.
We started the interview before you put us on hold for three times, talking about the new album, Miracle of Science, which is your first record on the Razor and Tie label, which is a big difference than being on Warner Brothers for all these years.
True enough.
What happened at Warner Brothers, and how is the business end of things different? I mean, were you treated better or worse at Warner Brothers?
Let's see. Well, I made five albums for them, and the first two did pretty good, but there were really kind of massive expectations behind the first one, and for one reason or another, it just kind of didn't, set the world on fire the way that. The way that we sort of thought it might.
It set my dorm room on fire.
Well, it was really loved by a lot of people, and it's still kind of like talked about, and people still buy it and everything like that. So, I consider it to have been a success, but, after the first two, there was really just sort of a cloud over the proceedings, at Warner's, and it was really kind of hard to make all the ones that followed. And, eventually, I just wanted to get away from them, and so my contract ran out, and I just kind of said goodbye to them. And then I did an album for MCA, and that was really a dispiriting kind of an experience because they were like totally incompetent. And so then I was just kind of soured on the whole thing, really sort of sick of not of making music and making records, but just feeling weird about being in the record business, being a cog in the machine, so then a little bit of time went by, and I just sort of met these fellas from Razor and Tie, and ended up doing first the live album for them, and now this new one, and
Well, maybe they don't have as much money as Warner Brothers, but maybe they are promoting you better because they actually like you and care.
There's that, and then the other thing is that I think that my record is the only record that they have out right now.
They did a reissue of an old Jerry Lewis record that's just amazing.
That's right, yeah. Jerry Lewis Just Sings.
All right, so when's Marshall Crenshaw going to do Marshall Crenshaw Just Sings?
Any day now.
Any day now.
I'm going to just redo that Jerry Lewis album.
Well, Todd Rundgren, did that solo a cappella record.
Yeah, did you ever hear it?
No, I've heard some.
Yeah, I got
things.
It.
You got it? Is that good?
I got it.
I heard there's like one or two like interesting songs, like... Every Todd Rundgren album has an interesting song on it, but sometimes you wonder, where's he coming from?
It's something that's pretty cool to hear, but not something you'd want to dig up and listen to a lot.
Well, I used to really like his records in the 70s, of course, the ones where... the first one that I got into was Something Anything, where he played all the instruments.
Well, he had hits on those records.
Huh?
He had hits back then.
Yeah, yeah.
Anymore, you can classify Todd Rundgren with all those English art rock dudes because he's just whacked out.
Well, it's hard to make records. It's really hard to do, Sometimes you're going to miss. And sometimes he hits, sometimes he misses.
Well, who do you like right now?
Who do I like right now?
Yeah, who are some of the Marshall Crenshaw faves?
Let me see. I got to look and...
Who does the unstoppable Marshall Crenshaw dig?
Well, I got this pile of records here. Let's see what they are. There's a record here by Wayne Kramer.
MC5 guy.
Yeah, he's made a couple of albums in the last few years, and they're pretty good, And I think he's one of the best rock guitarists who walks on two legs. He's really very good. I got the new Beck album because I really like the video for Where It's At, so I went and bought the album.
Are you a big fan of the Macarena?
It's okay. I don't hate it, you know. It's kind of fun.
You Can you dance it?
My 8-year-old niece really loves it. And so, I mean, I kind of like to watch her and her friends do the Macarena. It's cute, you know. I went to a wedding about 3 weeks ago, and this guy's 60-year-old, the 60-year-old father of the groom was doing the Macarena. That was pretty hilarious. I mean, you know, I don't hate it. I mean...
So you're saying the Macarena is okay for the elderly and for the very young.
And for those getting married.
And for those, yeah. But for everybody else, it's just okay.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't bought it, you know, but it's okay. I've heard worse records.
We're talking to Marshall Crenshaw on the Chris and Rob late-night talk show from his home in Woodstock, New York. A minute ago, you were talking about how hard it is to make records and that sometimes you miss. A lot of people, especially like these reviews of the new record, who say, oh, it's the best record since Marshall Crenshaw's first record. Do you find it hard to live up to your first record, like, is put upon a lot of artists who make records? Is that something that dogs you around a little bit?
Kind of, yeah, sometimes it does. But, I mean, I actually, at this point, now that I've sort of gotten some distance from the issue... I do think that maybe that first record and the one after it were the best records that I made during the 1980s, you know. Some of the other ones are kind of a little bit of a chore for me to listen to.
Downtown is a fabulous LP.
Oh, thank you. That's nice. See every
but
time
then
I
again,
say
that was the third one.
Every time I say that, I know I should stick my foot in my mouth because, you know, people that do like my records really like them a lot. So if I sit here and say, well, you know, I hate that one, or I wish I could burn the tapes to that one, or...
Well, Downtown is better than Field Day.
You know what I'm saying? If I say something like that, then I'm, like, hurting somebody's feelings.
I'm not going to lie to you, Marshall. I'm going to take issue with you about Field Day. It's got some good songs on it, but it can't touch Downtown.
Well, that's your opinion, Jack.
Okay.
I like Field Day. I like Downtown,
you know,
too, but...
Well, see, I guess now we're just, like, kind of mired down in this whole thing, but, you know...
We're mired in your brilliance.
Oh, thank you.
And this is all minutia to those who are listening who have never heard of Marshall Crenshaw or tuned in tonight and going, huh?
I'm sure there's a few of those, yeah.
From the album Field Day by Marshall Crenshaw, let's check out Whenever You're On My Mind. We're talking to Marshall Crenshaw here on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. What would you want to say to those who maybe have never heard your record, not because they don't like them, but just because they haven't been exposed to them yet? What Crenshaw record should they check out and how should they go about the Marshall Crenshaw experience?
I'd say get the new one that I just made.
Oh, yeah.
My brother Robert says it's the best one.
Even better than the first one? The legendary, you know, debut rookie album?
I'd rather hear the new one myself, because when I did the first album, I was a lot younger, a lot dumber than I am now. So I kind of am more comfortable with the new record. But I always think whatever... new record I've done is, I always think it's the best one, you know, when I first finish it. I don't know. I don't know what to tell. I'm not good at hyping my stuff, you know.
Did you ever make a record and then you thought it was all right, and then when it hit the shelves, you were just like, damn, I wish I could go burn the acetate of that thing?
I feel that way about some of them, but I'm...
But you're not going to tell me which ones?
I shouldn't, you know. I shouldn't do that. I think it would be kind of, you know, like masochistic a little bit, so I don't want to get into that.
Well, was there any the other way where you thought, man, I really nailed this? This might, you know, this might be the big, huge breakthrough that everyone's been talking about, and then...
He's going to say the new one, Rob. He's
going
to say the new one.
The new one's going to do that, isn't
it? Yeah.
And then when the next record comes out, it'll be this one.
That's about it.
It'll be the unstoppable Marshall Crenshaw. We're talking to Marshall Crenshaw on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. Marshall.
Yeah.
I always, whenever we interview a big-time, big-shot rock and roll star, this is the question I always like to ask because it usually gets the most colorful reaction. Marshall Crenshaw, are you jaded?
Am I jaded? Let's see. Yeah, a little bit.
Why? What has made you into the jaded singer-songwriter that you are today? Were you jaded when you started?
It's really kind of like the passage of time, I think, you know? I mean, I've been messing around with this stuff for a pretty long while. And in the beginning, I was, like, super eager and very kind of naive and just really enthusiastic about the idea of doing what I was doing, you know? Just everything was cool with me back then. So I've come a long way away from that. I'm not entirely jaded. I still really dig making records and all that, you know. But yeah, I mean, how can you sort of grow old and not become a little bit jaded?
But don't you wake up every morning and want to play your guitar and try to write a new song?
I do play guitar every day. I don't write songs every day, though, because I think if you wrote songs every day and never stopped, that your brain would turn into mush.
You turn into like a Tin Pan Alley guy.
No, I'm really not. I can't do that. But when I do it, I kind of bang away at it until the work's done. But I do work on you know, like, just on guitar and stuff like that. You know, I do something involving music every day. Just not songwriting. Songwriting is you gotta moderate yourself with that, I think.
We're talking to Marshall Crenshaw on the Chris and Rob Late Night.
At least we're trying to.
Yeah. At least we haven't been interrupted in the last 15 minutes by any crank phone calls.
Well, that's true. That seems to have kind of wound itself down.
We've been talking a little bit with you tonight about the record business and making records, and I know from talking to other big-shot rock and roll stars that the big record companies, like the ones you have been on until recently, are looking for a big hit. And if you don't deliver the big hit, sometimes they let you go. Is Whenever You're On My Mind from Field Day, your second record, the biggest hit you've had?
No. In fact, not at all. I think the biggest sort of like... I think the biggest chart record I had on Warner Brothers was Someday, Someway.
That was from your first record.
Yeah, that actually got into the top 40.
See, there you go. Whoa. Again. You know, you can't top that first record success.
No. That was the one kind of shot that I had at really sliding into the mainstream, you know, but it just sort of didn't happen. And then after that, I was kind of stigmatized, and it was really hard to get anything going after that. I mean, Whenever You're On My Mind was a big... hit on a couple of top 40 stations just in isolated towns, but then what your record company is supposed to do when that happens is they're supposed to then try to spread the joy around to other places, you know. But Warner's didn't do that when Whenever You're On My Mind was a hit, and I've often wondered why they didn't do that. I mean, I have sort of like pet theories as to why, but
compare notes with Cheap Trick, because they always thought the record company was out to get them too.
See, this all sounds like, you know, like belly aching. You know, I mean, I really don't like kind of spoiled, overly self-absorbed white people. You know, so I don't want to sit here and complain about the bad experiences I've had in the record business, because I have more good feelings than bad about my career.
Well, it seems like,
but you just kind of keep leading me towards the.
Well, you know, Rob and I are jaded talk show hosts, and this sells ad time.
Well, it just seems to me that a lot of major labels have trouble promoting someone who just writes really good songs and makes really good records. And you weren't nearly like goofy enough with a weird haircut to be new wave, and you know, you obviously weren't like heavy metal or anything. You were just a guy writing great songs and making really good records. And for some weird reason, seems like major labels, you know, have no idea how to promote someone.
Unless
like that.
You're a freak.
You think that, really?
Well, I mean, Chris and I love a bunch of pop guys. We talked to Tommy Keane.
Oh, yeah.
He kind of had the same thing happen.
Uh-huh.
And,
I think you hit on something a minute ago when you said I wasn't new wave enough to be something or other. You remember when you said that?
Yeah.
I think you got a point there, because like when my first album was out, I'm going to give you an example of the kind of bad luck that we ran into. You know, we had the East Coast pretty well sewn up on my first record, and we were, you know, doing pretty well with the rest of the country, but we never got on a radio station in Los Angeles, because at that time there was this kind of generational battle going on in rock between what they used to call mainstream rock and what they used to call new wave, right?
Right.
So if you were new wave, then you got to be on K-Rock in Los Angeles, and if you were mainstream rock, then you got to be on KLOS or KMET. But I mean, you could have maybe listened to my first album and figured that both formats would embrace us, but in fact
So Van
Halen kind of canceled each other out. Neither one of them picked up on us. So that kind of sunk us right there. That was when our party train started to run off the rails because we didn't get on the radio in L.A.
So Blondie was on K-Rock and Van Halen was on KOLS and Marshall Crenshaw was on neither.
Yeah, I wanted us to be on K-Rock, you know. Like back then my sympathies were definitely with New Wave rather than anything else, you know. I was really sick of 70s rock at that time but New Wave in Los Angeles just had a different definition than it did in other places, you know. Like K-Rock back then they played a lot of English stuff. I mean 95% English stuff, and then they played kind of local New Wave records like Oingo Boingo and like Teenage Enema Nurse and stuff like that, you know. So
Plimsolls.
Our stuff, well, yeah, the Plimsolls, but not very much. They didn't play them.
Really?
So our stuff kind of just didn't stick. We just didn't click with them. So that's what happened with that.
We're talking to Marshall Crenshaw, singer-songwriter extraordinaire on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. Mm-hmm. If what was New Wave back then was compared to anything now, you might call it what in the radio business is referred to as alternative, and that has pretty much hit the mainstream. Anymore, these alternative bands are just like mainstream.
But you know what? When I think of New Wave now, I have a sort of a, I think of like kind of eighth note rhythms and you know, like cheap synthesizers and stuff. That's what when I hear the term New Wave, I always think of like the Cars or something, you know.
Because that's what it is. That's the stereotype. That's what it was back then and will always be. But what is New Wave now? And by New Wave, I don't mean the sound, but I mean what's new and up and coming that's not mainstream, because the radio business has conglomerated it all into being mainstream enough. There seems to be no more underground.
Well, I'm the wrong guy to ask about that because I'm really kind of not diligently searching out whatever the next thing is. I'm sort of like oblivious to that, really. I mean, I follow current stuff pretty well, but I don't dig much deeper than what's on the radio or on MTV. So whatever the thing is that's sort of like lurking below the surface, I'm going to be one of the last people to find out about it.
Do you even care?
Sure, yeah, I do. You know, I mean, I always try to keep my ears open and my mind open, you know, and I'm not sort of like closed off from what's going on in music, but I just, you know, I mean, the kind of stuff that really kind of gets me going is really sort of like, you know, deeply obscure stuff. Like I'm trying to order this record now by a guy called Andre Pop, who's a French composer, and then I like this guy Lou Harrison that I heard on NPR the other day.
Oh, Lou Harrison is a freak, man. I met him once.
You did?
Yeah, he's an older guy. He's very, very outgoingly gay. And
right.
He writes, you know, obviously you know what he does, but for the people in Radioland who aren't familiar, Lou Harrison writes sort of a Western classical music fusion with Asian rhythms and Asian sounds.
That's what I heard.
Lots of marimbas and stuff, those kind of Asian, and a lot of Javanese and Balinese gamelan.
Exactly. Hey, you're pretty sharp.
I went to music school, dude.
Oh, good for you. I wish I had.
I think they're coming
to
get you, man.
Listen,
you're not smoking dope on the porch, are you?
I should be, but I'm not.
I thought Woodstock was a quiet community.
It's pretty quiet. It's pretty quiet, sometimes kind of boring.
How are those fireflies about now?
Let me look. I see a toad. I see a toad, but no fireflies.
Did you go lick it?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Marshall Crenshaw, on the new album, you have an instrumental called The Theme from Flare Gun, which we're playing in the background here.
Okay.
The Theme from Flare Gun. What is Flare Gun?
Well, here's the thing. See, I wrote that tune about 7 or 8 years ago, and it's had a lot of different titles over the years, but when I was getting ready to put it on this record, I figured I should call it Theme From Something, you know, because that way people would know it was an instrumental.
So there's not a movie or a TV show out there called Flare Gun that I should be looking for?
No, I got the idea to use the word Flare Gun from Smoke on the Water. You know that line in Smoke on the Water where the guy says, "Some stupid with a flare gun"?
Yeah.
That's kind of where I got the idea. So it's theme from Flare Gun.
At the beginning of the new album, there's the sound bite.
Yeah. are you? You're in our dressing room of the Jungle Hut in Passaic, New Jersey, and we're on next. Let's go. Come on.
What is that soundbite?
What is that soundbite? Well,
it's right before your big hit, What Do You Dream Of?
Right. I was over at my brother John's house on Thanksgiving, and we sat and watched this movie called Bela Lugosi Meets a Brooklyn Gorilla. And
was it directed by Ed Wood or anybody?
Well, this is kind of like sub-Ed Wood. The stars of the movie, of course, Bela Lugosi was in it, and then there were these guys called Sammy Petrillo and Duke Mitchell. They were a comedy, like a song comedy team. But the thing about them was that they were the fake Martin and Lewis. Like Sammy Petrillo kind of resembles Jerry Lewis, you know, and he does Lewis's act, you know. And that's what they were. They were the fake Martin and Lewis. And this movie is really spooky to watch because they're so, well, they're bad, basically. They're just really terrible. But anyway.
What's your favorite Jerry Lewis movie?
My favorite Jerry Lewis movie?
Yeah. Got one?
I like Rockabye Baby. That's a good one. Frank Tashlin was the director of that.
Right, and he had to take care of all these little babies, didn't have a home.
Right.
They would all start crawling somewhere, and then he'd catch them, and another one would start crawling off somewhere and get into trouble.
I like Who's Minding the Store. You ever see that one?
That one I have not seen.
There's a few that I like. Yeah, he's okay.
You've seen The Patsy?
No.
Patsy, but you know what? I highly recommend The Patsy.
You know what I wish I had? I wish that I had videotapes of some of the muscular dystrophy telethons from the early 70s when Jerry was messed up on Percodans all the time. I used to watch those and just revel in them and love them. And I'd like to see some of those again now. I think they would just be priceless.
Well, did you see last weekend he had on Jerry Springer?
No.
Jerry Springer comes out on stage, goes toe-to-toe with Jerry Lewis, and it was just a big Jerry meets Jerry love fest.
Well, how about that?
Oh, Jerry, you're so wonderful. You're my favorite human being.
I sold my car to this guy about a month and a half ago who looked exactly like Jerry Springer. Didn't Jerry Springer used to be the mayor of Cincinnati?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you want some stories?
Yeah, because I don't really know.
Well, see, he was the mayor of Cincinnati until a week after his wedding, he was caught writing a bad check to a prostitute that bounced.
Hello!
That was the end of his mayorhood.
The prostitute bounced? No.
I think all three of them bounced, if you know what I'm saying. And they bounced right out of the mayor's office, I'll tell you that.
That's amazing. That's what happened to him? That's
yes.
Then he wound up being the co-host of the evening news, the 6 o'clock news, sitting next to a fat lady named Norma Rashid. It was Norma and Jerry. And then a little ways into that, Jerry started doing Jerry's commentary. At the end of every news, Jerry would make some comment about something that was timely, happening in the news, with a little bit of his Jewish slant to it. Next thing you know, there you go.
So he was a mayor of Cincinnati, and then he
was a news anchor.
Brought down by scandal, and now he's on TV. He's like, yeah. He's Teflon.
He is mm-hmm. Teflon.
You can't stop
him. He also ran for governor of Ohio, somewhere in there.
Jeez.
He's done it all.
Boy, oh boy.
We're very proud.
And I was surprised as hell. I mean, I fell on my ass when I saw him walk out there with Jerry Lewis. I was like, this guy's a star? And I guess he is.
I guess he is, yeah. I guess he has, you know, like daytime TV fans are kind of, you know, they're so cult, you know, they're like very rabid and very partisan. So
if I send you a video of Jerry Meets Jerry, will you write a song about it for your next record?
No. I won't write a song about it. Absolutely not.
So could you write a song about a couple of lovable talk show hosts from Cincinnati who just love to take calls from young 15-year-old girls?
Do you know anybody who might have tapes of Jerry Lewis telethons from the early 70s?
I'll look into it. I can get you a tape of the one with Dean when Dean Martin walked out, but that one's not too hard to come by.
No, that's too late.
It's on all the documentaries.
Yeah, he was clean. Jerry was off the Percodans by then.
No, that's not what Jerry said. Jerry doesn't remember meeting Dean.
Is that right?
Yes. Backstage, Jerry was like, what the hell just happened out there?
Oh, okay. I was wrong.
Jerry was still a goofball.
And you know, Dean was skunked. If you look at that video, you'll see droops under his eyes that mean he was just skunked.
Wow.
Take a look at that on the next time you see the Jerry documentary. Watch when Dean walks out in the telethon. That guy's just loaded.
Well, they say that he used to eat Percodans like Tic Tacs.
Well, according to Jerry, he was prescribed to have one Percodan a day. 7 years later, he was eating 13 a day, and that's when he became addicted.
You guys ever take Percodans?
I haven't. Have you, Rob?
No, not lately.
Have you, Marshall?
Oh, never in my life, no. I never even heard of them.
I don't know exactly what they do, but they mess you up, boy.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so what else do you want to talk about?
I think we've touched on all of it. What else you got, Rob? I mean, we could go on all night with this.
Anything else you want to mention about the new record?
Just that it's really good, and I hope you're going to play some of it on the radio.
Yeah, what song should we play?
What song do you want us to outro the big Marshall Crenshaw interview with? We'll play any song you want.
Oh, but you know...
But you have to tell us about the song.
Oh, okay. Well, they're all good. What Do You Dream Of is good.
That's the hit. Okay, so we'll wrap things up with the hit.
Okay. What kind of station is this, by the way?
This is the most powerful station
you have ever
Midwest.
Heard in your life.
No, I mean, what sort of a... Is it a talk station?
No, it's like a public radio station. We have different shows on. Some guys do reggae, some guys do jazz.
Oh, I see.
Some guys do a little of this. You got a couple of gospel shows in the morning. You
yeah.
got a couple of freaky, you know, lesbian gay shows on the weekend.
Some, I see.
You know, some people come in and play ethnic music. You got the folk rock, you got the folk, you got you know, the Indian music with the sitars and everything.
I like that.
The Echoes of Greece.
Oh, yeah, we got Echoes of Greece.
We got the German sounds of the Queen City.
We got Acid Party, where they play like that rave disco music.
Cool. All right, good. And thanks for your interest.
Well, thanks. When you come to Cincinnati, remember us and we'll hook up.
All right, you guys.
Cool. Okay.
Okay, have a good night.
Thanks, Marshall.
Bye.
Later.
Bye.